today's session of the House General Government Committee, and my pen's missing. Nothing's here. Thank you.
We love to see it.
Thank you. This morning, we have a number of things on our agenda, and I'm going to immediately make a quick change to put one thing ahead of another. So at this point, I would like to open a public hearing on House Continuing Resolution Number 3 and invite Representative Patty Smith to come up and tell us about it.
The microphone, so you can sit over here.
Yeah.
You tend to want to do that. For the record, I'm Representative Patty Smith. I represent House District 52. Good morning. I'm here today to ask your concurrence with House Concurrent Resolution Number 3. And what it is a 100-year celebration of Welch's, the city of Welch's. And it must be a big year because I think you're going to hear lots of those this year. But I happen to be the first. So I just want to tell you a little bit about Welch's. And I gave you a handout that gives you all the information on it. But it is near Mount Hood. It's been up Highway 26. It's just a beautiful one of the little towns in our district. And the part I like about it is it reminds me of what Corbett used to be where I grew up. It's very community-oriented. They take their history very serious. And this year they're doing a big celebration for their 100 years. They're doing the post office has done a postal mark that is in your handout. February 21st happens to be the actual celebration. We're doing it on the 18th because February 21st is President's Day. And the post office will be closed. But the good part is that it's a community of a great many citizens and historians and people who really care about that community. And on that day, they're going to do this. This resolution is part of just their celebration, but they're having all the kids from the Welch's Elementary come over during the day and kind of bring them up to speed on what's going on. So I just hope you'll pass this so I can deliver all the great historical facts on the floor to you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay. Now you can stay in the chair. I'm closing the public hearing on House Continuing Resolution Number 3 and opening a work session on House Continuing Resolution Number 3. Representative Sumner.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 3 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. We have a motion. Shall we have, is there any, I can do this by acclamation, can I?
Yes, you may.
Is there any objection? So moved by the committee. We will ask you, Representative Smith, to carry this on the floor and tell us more about Welch's at the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, committee members. At this time, I if you recall, we asked Corey Streisinger, the administrator of business and Consumer and Business Affairs Agency for the state. We had asked her previously to come and talk about her agency, and since we're doing a number of bills that sort of interrelate within her agency, she couldn't come earlier, and we've asked her to come now, and I would like her to come forward and give us a look at her agency and what it looks like for us as far as her agency is concerned. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. For the record, I am Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And what I'm planning to do this morning is give you a brief overview of what the department does at a fairly high level. But, of course, I'll be happy to answer any questions about any specific areas that you're interested in. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is the state's largest business regulatory agency, but we are a consumer protection agency primarily. Our mission is to protect and serve Oregon's consumers and workers while supporting a positive business climate in the state. We don't view those two parts of the mission as alternatives or opposites, but rather complementary. In our view, a good regulatory system is one that protects consumers and workers and is also business friendly. With that in mind, there are some sort of general strategies or approaches that we take as a regulatory agency, and you'll actually see some of them. I did bring you some materials, which you'll see in a folder that looks like this, which I believe is in front of you. And let me just tell you what's in here. There is a contact sheet that looks like this, which lays out who to contact in each of our areas. You may find that useful, for example, if you have constituent questions or if issues come up on any bills. Of course, you're always welcome to contact me, but that will also get you to people who know about these specific areas. We've given you a summary of our legislation as well. And then you will also see in the folder a card that looks like this. And over on the right-hand side is our set of strategies, which is what I want to talk about just very briefly, because this is really our approach to how we do our work. We try to focus on areas where there are real concerns, not theoretical concerns or problems that might possibly arise, and we try to focus on achieving outcomes rather than just working on process. We try to structure our programs to impose the minimum burden on the businesses that we regulate, consistent with achieving the outcomes that we're looking for. And I think you've heard a lot about these types of themes from Pat Allen from our Office of Regulatory Streamlining as well, and that's no surprise since we're very consistent in how we try to approach things from that perspective. We try to use a variety of approaches to achieve our results, not just regulation or enforcement. Those are often last resorts. Often we can get results through education, training, consultation. We believe, generally speaking, that most businesses that we regulate hold themselves to high standards and want to hold themselves to high standards, and our job is to make it easy for them to do that, and then, of course, to use enforcement tools when we need to for those relatively few who are out of compliance. We try to make good use of technology to make it very easy to do business with us. We try to promote a customer service attitude and a problem-solving attitude. And we look for ways to measure how well our programs are doing, and we look for continuous improvement. Our goal, generally speaking, is to ensure that our services provide value not only to consumers and workers, but also to the businesses we regulate. We are an other-funded agency. We have no general fund appropriation, so we rely on the fees that our stakeholders pay, and generally speaking, they agree with the payment of those fees and support our fees because they do see, in fact, the value of the services that we provide, and that is our goal. Our major programs are workers' compensation, Oregon OSHA, insurance, building codes, and finance and corporate securities. We also include some smaller programs, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business, and, of course, the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. And you will see also in your folder some of our brochures, which are part of our public education and consumer education. We provided you with a sampling of them. Again, you might find that useful in dealing with your constituents. I'd like to start with Oregon OSHA and workers' compensation, which, of course, are related. Oregon OSHA focuses on keeping workers safe, and workers' compensation focuses on ensuring that workers who are injured receive appropriate benefits and assistance in returning to work. And as you may be aware, Oregon has experienced a 15-year record of declining and then flat workers' compensation premium rates with improved safety, improved benefits, and return-to-work programs as well, the combined impact of which has been a cumulative savings for Oregon employers of over $10 billion over the past 15 years. And is also now constituting a recruiting tool for our ability to attract businesses here, particularly from California, which has a workers' compensation system which, despite some really major overhaul efforts, is still vastly more expensive than ours. Through Oregon OSHA, we administer a state plan for occupational safety and health that has to meet federal requirements. It's a federal delegation. We promulgate health and safety standards. We enforce those standards through inspections and accident investigations. And in addition, we have active consultation and training programs through which we work with employers and workers on a voluntary basis to help make workplaces safer. Our goal is to have every encounter with Oregon OSHA be a positive learning experience about safety. Workplace injury and illness rates have continued to decline this biennium, and the severity of injuries have declined as well. Some of our recent projects in Oregon OSHA include a core rules manual, which is intended to provide particularly small businesses with a short and easy to understand set of rules that will basically keep them in compliance rather than having to have them deal with the bookshelf full of more technical standards. We've also expanded our outreach and training materials aimed at Spanish-speaking workers. We have department-wide a fairly active program of dealing with workers for whom English is not their primary language, because if we want to promote safety, if we want to promote understanding of workers' compensation, for example, we have to reach out in language in the languages that people use. In our workers' compensation division, we administer and enforce Oregon's workers' compensation laws. Our goals are to make sure that employers provide workers' compensation insurance coverage for their workers, and that workers who are injured receive timely and accurate benefits. We provide dispute resolution, and we also, as I mentioned, oversee a number of return-to-work programs. We work closely with the Management Labor Advisory Committee, which consists of management and worker representatives, to identify policy issues relating to workers' compensation. And through MLAC's work, you will be seeing this session major sets of proposals in three areas. The first focusing on improvement to vocational rehabilitation and return-to-work programs. The second proposing changes in the standards for determining and rescinding permanent total disability status, sometimes referred to as PTD. And the third addressing concerns about the use of what are generally called either independent medical examinations or sometimes insurer medical examinations, or IMEs. Our department also provides administrative support to the Workers' Compensation Board, which is the adjudicatory body for workers' compensation appeals. And we have two ombudsmen related to workers' compensation, an ombudsman for injured workers and an ombudsman for small business. Our next program area is insurance. We monitor insurance companies' financial condition to ensure their continued solvency, because if you are a member of the insurance-buying public, your first and primary concern is making sure that if you do have a claim, the insurance company is there to respond. We enforce compliance with insurance laws aimed at fair treatment of the insurance-buying public, consumers and businesses. And we work with those who purchase insurance to resolve insurance-related complaints. During this interim, some of the areas we've been working on, we have implemented legislation that was passed last session that limited the use of credit scoring by insurance companies. That continues to be a topic of great interest to many people, and you may be seeing, actually you will be seeing some technical changes that we are proposing, and you may well be seeing proposals from other parties as well to explore that area further. Another area of consumer concern that we've heard quite a bit about is homeowners insurance and the way in which claims databases, national claims databases, are used by some insurance carriers. And we have a bill, Senate Bill 118, in this session to look at some of those issues. We've also spent some time on insurance issues of particular interest to seniors, making long-term care insurance more portable state to state and more usable and to deliver better value for seniors. And we also have some new rules in place dealing with how life insurance and annuity products can be marketed, and a requirement that's similar to the requirement that's long been in place for securities, which prohibits the sale of products which are unsuitable based on a person's age or financial status. An additional area of concern in the insurance world is the affordability and availability of insurance in several key areas. Right now, those include medical malpractice insurance, construction contractors liability insurance, and adult foster care insurance. We have been actively involved in looking for ways to address each of those markets. We have some programs in place. For example, we are running what's called a market assistance plan for construction contractors insurance, which matches up those who want to buy the insurance with the different types of insurance available. So we work with the Construction Contractors Board sort of as a matchmaking service. In the area of medical malpractice insurance, we have been administering the program which the legislature put in place last session to provide some relief for rural doctors in particular. Those are areas, again, where there's a lot of interest, and I feel certain that you will be seeing proposals for legislation in each of those areas. Our next major program area is building codes. The Building Codes Division is responsible for the adoption and interpretation of a consistent set of statewide building codes, and we also license electricians and plumbers, and we certify construction inspectors. Building codes administration in this state is a little bit unusual. There are statewide codes, but in the areas of plumbing and electrical and mechanical and structural permitting and inspection, we have shared responsibility with local jurisdictions. Local jurisdictions can opt whether or not to provide those services. And then we are the provider of last resort where the local jurisdictions choose not to provide the services, and that means primarily in a number of rural areas. We also provide statewide services in three program areas: manufactured housing, elevators, and boilers and pressure vessels. And we work with local jurisdictions to ensure code consistency. Our focus currently in building codes has been on streamlining regulatory processes, improved customer service, and statewide consistency. We've consolidated some licenses. We've simplified fee structures. We are in the process of implementing, on a pilot basis in the Portland Tri-County area, a system that allows contractors to purchase minor permits online, and we've expanded our program for making these minor permits available in multiple jurisdictions so that you can buy a sheet of what are called minor labels from one place and then use them in a variety of jurisdictions as opposed to having to go to each county building office. The online licensing system actually is one that we're piloting in our agency in several of our divisions. We expect to be using it agency-wide for about 80 different licenses, and we're actually working with a number of other agencies that do licensing throughout the state to see if we can assist with using this particular suite of products called My License and License 2000. You may hear more about them for a number of licensing projects. In fact, one of the areas where we're also using these licensing products is in our Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, which I'd like to talk briefly about next. That division contains a large variety of regulatory programs. We oversee state-chartered banks and credit unions. We enforce the state securities laws, and we regulate consumer finance companies, mortgage lenders, pawnbrokers, pre-need funeral trusts, money transmitters, and several others. We are actually in two areas proposing eliminating our programs for international trade consultants and digital signature companies. We have one registrant in each of those areas. They're non-mandatory and they don't seem to serve a useful purpose, so you will be seeing that bill as well. Our goal in this area generally is to encourage a wide variety of financial options for Oregonians and also to ensure that financial products are provided in a safe, sound, equitable, and fraud-free manner. We monitor financial solvency of those we regulate. We ensure compliance. And we are actively involved in public education about how to be wise users of financial services. A major area of interest this past interim has been the proliferation of payday lenders. You've probably seen them in your own communities. They make very short-term loans at fees which are the equivalent of very high interest rates. The loans might be for 2 weeks or for 30 days, and the equivalent interest rate can be several hundred percent. We did a very detailed study of payday lending, and we think that you will likely see some legislative proposals in this area as well. This is also an example of using a variety of approaches to address a problem. What we found in this study is that although the cost of using this type of credit can be very high, we also have a number of people who have a significant need for immediate short-term money. If you are paid monthly, for example, and are living month to month and have an emergency at the end of the month, this may be your only way to get cash. We work with our credit union industry, and with our encouragement, a number of them are now offering essentially payday loan alternative products which have interest rates which are much more equivalent to what you would pay for a credit card or conventional loans, which allow their members the same type of credit access. In addition to these larger programs that I've just covered, I mentioned that we do have several smaller programs. The Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, or OMIP, provides health insurance coverage for people who cannot obtain coverage in the regular market, often because they have a condition that makes them uninsurable, like cancer or AIDS. This program also provides portability coverage for people who lose their group coverage and are entitled to portability coverage under federal law and don't have other options. Our Office of Minority, Women, and Emerging Small Business certifies businesses under federal and state programs for eligibility for public contracting opportunities. And finally, the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, which, of course, you have heard quite a bit about. I believe Pat Allen did a presentation to you, and that office works with over 40 different agencies to carry out the Regulatory Streamlining Initiative, and I believe you have a number of bills on that topic, in front of you today. So I would be happy to answer any questions you might have about any of our programs, either now or later.
Questions from the committee?
One small question.
Representative Summer.
In relation to consumer affairs, do you in any way regulate product safety or wholesomeness in food and that sort of thing in your department?
Madam Chair, Representative Sumner, we do not. Food programs, I believe, are generally administered by the Department of Agriculture, although there may be some in the department in the Health Division of Department of Human Services as well. We are not involved in product safety issues. There's some federal regulation in that area, and in terms of general consumer fraud, that is, being sold a product which is not as advertised, the Department of Justice has a consumer protection unit that works on those issues.
So your activity interrelates with a great number of other departments. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, Representative Sumner, that's correct. We actually work closely with the Department of Justice in areas that are within our jurisdiction, securities, insurance, and so on.
Thank you.
Representative Galicia.
When you looked at the payday loans, did you also look at refund anticipation loans?
Madam Chair, Representative Galicia, we are actually looking at that area as well. Several members of the legislature are interested in that area, and we've been exploring what some options might be. So we do have some. We did not do a comprehensive study in the same way that we did with payday lending, but it is an area that we're paying some attention to.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Buckley.
Can I just ask about your education services in terms of any programs you might have with university college students about the use of financial services? Many of our kids now have credit cards, and I'm wondering if there's any services states provide in terms of informing them about what the best products are.
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, that's an excellent question, and I don't actually know the answer. I will get back to you on that. We have been involved in several of the sort of multi-agency groups looking at curriculum building, and I don't know whether any of it is specifically aimed at the college-age population. The financial services industry is also very interested in curriculum development for financial education, and so we do work on a number of those education programs. But again, I'm not sure exactly what level, and I will let you know.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much for coming in, and I just have one comment. I'm so struck by all the different little bits of regulation and protection, and then we're also talking about streamlining and unloading. You're an agency caught in the middle of sort of, in some ways, conflicting needs, and have been totally impacted by the internet. And I applaud any efforts to make this more workable in this more global system, and I'm heartened to see the response in that way. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
All right, committee. Next on our agenda is House Bill 2092, It is, I have taken the prerogative to pull this from the agenda today because I believe there's further work that needs to be done on this. So it will come back, hopefully in 2 days, but...
I think next week.
All right, he's guilty.
Oh.
Apologies.
Thank you,
Somebody's
Representative.
Your phone.
And it was Representative Hass, so I don't know why he's going there.
And I'm sure that won't happen again in
Never.
My committee. Thank you. The next item, I am going to open public hearing, further public hearing, on House Bill 2094. I believe there are further folks who would like to talk to us about this. I have a sign-up sheet and a number of people I know who might be interested. So, Pat Allen, would you come forward and talk a little bit further about this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Patrick Allen, Manager of the Office of Regulatory Stream Mining. A couple of things about this bill. I believe you have dash one amendments that deal with the issues that were raised in committee when this bill was first heard that specify the use of an administrative rule process to consider offering extended licenses and some basic findings by agencies. Since that meeting, I've become aware of concerns that cities potentially have with the legislation, particularly relating to OLCC. As you may know, city government right now has the opportunity to participate in the granting a renewal of a license by the OLCC for various kinds of operations. And there are some concerns the cities have about how this would impact their ability to participate in that process. I'm working now with them and with OLCC to try to see if we can figure out ways, either by understanding of how this would operate or with additional language in the bill, we can be more specific to address some of those concerns and would suggest if it pleases you to consider deferring action on this bill for a bit of time to let us try to have those conversations and work that issue out. And they may well wish to speak to the issue as well this morning. And that's all I have on that bill. Unless there are questions.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, actually I do. Oh, and that was that particular subject you were just talking about, the city's relationship to LCC and granting a license, because I was on a city council for 7 years or more, and we'd make recommendations of not to issue a license, and yet it seemed like it was always issued. I would like to know what the criteria is, what parts actually do the cities play in this, and if they have any significant impact on you, on OLCC. And I did ask your legislative liaison to get me that information, and thus far I haven't seen it. So I would like to have that. What is the criteria, and why do the cities go through a public hearing on this issue when there may be another set of criteria that they're unaware of?
Chair, Representative Esquivel, was it by chance OLCC's legislative liaison?
Correct.
Okay. I can speak to the bill itself, which deals with the term of the license, not to the underlying process. This would apply to a variety of licenses and a variety of agencies, each of which has its own standards for licensing. I'd be happy to follow up with OLCC and work to see that they get back to you. I can't speak to the underlying licensing process.
Further questions of Mr. Allen? Thank you, Pat. At this time, Marge Kafori from the City of Portland. And friends who shall be identified when they get here.
Look out.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marge Kafori. I represent the City of Portland. I had a chance to speak to you, Madam Chair, yesterday about our concerns with this bill and also with Mr. Allen. He has expressed very well that we do have some concerns about the OLCC licensing aspect of this measure and would like to have a few days to be able to try to work something out that would allay the concerns of my city and I think also the Oregon cities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dave Barenberg from League Oregon Cities, and we look forward to working with Pat and City of Portland to address the concerns of all cities which would be impacted by that language, and appreciate the opportunity and time to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in. We are in public hearing. Anyone else care to come forward and speak on this particular bill? By all means.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, my name is Bill Perry. I'm with the Oregon Restaurant Association, and we obviously would not like to see the OLCC taken out of this bill. Obviously, when you look at the first section of the bill, it does say that the agency may extend these licensees, so they don't have to. And I think when you look at the OLCC process today, excuse me, they take in the city consideration. Just to give you kind of a brief example, right now, the most, like 90% of licenses, I can get a closer number, but 90% of them go through with no objections or anything else. And these are the kind of people that probably would be well served to have a 5-year license, because they're not taking up a lot of your time or our time. Right now, the director has an ability to approve those licenses. Now, the commission has set a standard to where if there's public opposition, a negative city endorsement, or past violations, then the commission has to deal with those licenses and renewals. So, you know, without speaking for the agency, I would believe that they would probably, they've been very hesitant to give long-term licenses or bypasses to anybody that's created problems in the community of the city or just with OLCC. So they would have the ability under this bill to say these people, if they come under this scrutiny, get a 1-year license. I think that's kind of what the bill is intended for without speaking for the sponsors. But there is a process in place today that deals with what we might consider the problem establishments, and these all go in front of OLCC, and you know, it doesn't just have to be cities, it can just be a significant public outcry or any prior violation. So there is something in OLCC in place today to deal with these kind of circumstances. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Do we have information requests, specific other information requests from the panel, from the committee? Things I will say that we will hear more, and more work will be done on this. And in closing this public hearing, I can assure you it will be back.
Very good.
Yeah. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2094. Next on our agenda, I'm going to go to session directly on some bills that we have heard. Okay. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2095. We heard testimony on this bill last week. Any comments or from the committee?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move HB 2095 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Galizio moves House Bill 2095 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any objection? So moved. Representative Galizio, would you like to carry this bill?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Moving to the next item on our agenda, open work session on House Bill 2188, and would like to invite testimony from Pat Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Pat Allen, Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Just wanted to amplify a bit on further on some background that you received in the initial public hearing on this, and respond to a couple of hallway questions I've fielded about the bill.
certainly the issues that are raised in this bill in terms of fiscal impact statements, statements of objectives, and particularly waiver, you know, on first reading of the bill raise questions and potential concerns for people. First, I think it's important to note that that this language resulted from what probably was about 6 months of intense discussions in the advisory committee itself, which included representatives from environmental, consumer interests, other kinds of perspectives, as well as those impacted by regulations. They really worked this issue hard from a full range of perspectives to come up with what they thought was a workable approach. We then went into a protracted period of working between Legislative Council and Department of Justice on language that they thought would work to make this administratively tenable and legally defensible. And I think we got to that point. So somewhere between 6 and 7 months altogether of work to get to the specific language that you have before you. Not to say that it's necessarily perfect, but I think I want to make sure you understand that this was done with a great deal of due diligence by the participants to get to where you are. The second thing is about the waiver language. Just to be clear, because it may not be completely clear from the language, an agency to do waivers at all under this provision would have to adopt a waiver rule as a general matter of policy. There is currently the capability under statute for anybody to petition an agency to write a rule. And so an agency could determine it's not going to do a waiver rule and receive a petition saying we'd like you to do a waiver rule, and it would have to deal with that petition in the course that it does, deciding to go into rulemaking or not. What that requirement for petitioning for rulemaking, I don't believe would allow to happen, is for someone to come in to petition for rulemaking for a specific waiver. I want to waive this rule, so I'm petitioning you to do a waiver. It has to do with waiver policy generally. The second issue I wanted to just raise for you is there's language in the bill dealing with waivers if they're consistent with the scope and intent of legislation. As you know, agencies do rules for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's to specifically enact policies that deal with broad direction. But lots of times the legislature passes very specific laws and says, you know, the agency will go do a rule that does A, B, C, and D. And so the agency does a rule that says A, B, C, and D. My reading and my understanding of the language is that if you have that kind of level of specific direction to an agency, that it would be very difficult for the agency to find an exception to that to be within the scope and intent with that specific level of direction. And that's a concern that has been raised at least by one agency about what the kind of circumstances they could be in with waivers. Those are the issues that I wanted to make sure you had a little bit more information about and answer some of the questions that I've heard, but I'd be happy to answer any other questions you might have.
Further questions? Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Committee, we are in work session. Are there any further comments or questions except to applaud the folks who have spent a lot of time working to get us this far? It needs to be said that process sometimes in government is terribly time-consuming, and it is appreciated of the folks who worked on this by this chair. Okay, we're in work session. Do I have a Representative Espelman?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2188 move to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Espelman has moved House Bill 2188 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? So moved. I'm playing it. Okay. All right. Next is House Bill 2204. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2204. This is the email bill. I have no invited testimony. Does the committee have any comments on this bill?
Phil Schradel is here. From the AG's office, if there are questions.
Okay, questions only. He hasn't indicated testimony. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that we adopt HB 2204, send it to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley has moved House Bill 2204 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? So moved. Representative Hussey, would you like to carry this bill for this committee to the House?
I'd be honored to do so, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir. And last on our agenda, I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2206. Modifies laws governing procedure for amending administrative rules. Members of the committee, comments?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Sumner moves House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? So move. Representative Sumner, would you like to carry this to the floor for us?
Would be an honor and a privilege.
Thank you, Representative Sumner. The business of this committee concluded. I adjourn the General Government Committee of the House, and thank you all very much, and thanks for all you who came to speak this day.